Good evening. For WBAI News in New York, I'm Linda Perry with some of the news for Wednesday, September 13, 2017. We'll begin with last night's primary. Voters basically stayed at home. Turnout close to the lowest ever, with just under 14% of active registered Democrats casting votes. The Daily News reports the turnout hovered just above the worst in modern history, which came in 2009. That's when just 11% of voters bothered to show up in the primary. For an analysis of last night's primary, here's Ben Max, executive editor of Gotham Gazette.
While it was indeed a low turnout affair, there were several significant takeaways from primary night in New York City. One is that Mayor Bill de Blasio won the Democratic primary for mayor handily, with about 75% of the vote. Second-place contender Sal Albanese pulled in about 15%, and the three other challengers, smaller numbers. De Blasio wasn't challenged by a sitting elected official or any other big name in the Democratic primary, partly a sign of the good things he's done for many Democrats, including labor unions. In other races, the Brooklyn District Attorney race was quite hotly contested among a crowded field trying to unseat acting District Attorney Eric Gonzalez, who had never won an election of his own. Gonzalez won handily himself with over 53% of the vote in a six-person field. No one was even really close. Gonzalez had a lot of institutional support. He had some name recognition, having been acting DA after the death of Ken Thompson in 2016. And he cruised where people thought he might not especially do so. Gonzalez will now get to work in January on a full term of his own, trying to deepen the Thompson legacy of reform that he's promised to seek. Otherwise, it was a good night for incumbents in the city council as well. Several city council members who were challenged from within their own party seeking re-election won, including Helen Rosenthal, Matthew Eugene, Carlos Menchaca in Brooklyn was being challenged by an assembly member, Felix Ortiz, from his own party, and he still pulled it out fairly easily. There were other races that were interesting to watch for open seats where the current council member is term limited out, therefore leaving a vacancy. In District 2 on the Lower East Side, Carlina Rivera won Rosie Mendez's seat handily. In District 4 on the East Side of Manhattan, Dan Gorodnick is departing, and his preferred successor, Keith Powers, was victorious. Assemblymember Mark Joni won a seat, State Senator Ruben Diaz Sr. won a city council seat, and Alika Samuel will be replacing Darlene Mealy in the Central Brooklyn District 41 seat that is in desperate need of some strong representation. Mayor de Blasio had gotten involved in a number of these primary contests, fairly rare for a sitting mayor, including backing Alika Samuel in that Brownsville and Central Brooklyn seat. Another race where the mayor endorsed that we still don't know the result of is City Council District 8, which is where Melissa Mark Viverito, the council speaker, is being term limited out. Her preferred successor, who de Blasio also endorsed, is Diana Ayala, who leads Assemblymember Robert Rodriguez by nearly 200 votes, but Rodriguez refuses to concede and says he wants to see all the affidavit and absentee ballots counted. Ayala had declared victory on primary night, but we still need to see the results of the District 8 race. One other race of significance was happening in City Council District 21 in Queens, where outgoing Councilmember Jalissa Ferreras Copeland had endorsed Assemblymember Francisco Moya to take her spot. Moya was facing Hiram Montserrat, a former city councilmember and state senator who had been convicted previously on charges of both assaulting his then-girlfriend and misusing public money. Montserrat nearly won the seat, but Moya prevailed. Another state legislator heading to the city council that will create a bunch of vacancies in the state assembly and state senate, where we'll see some special elections coming up for those seats. But many in the Democratic establishment and other people all over the city are breathing a sigh of relief that Moya was able to put the race away and Montserrat will not be returning to elected office, at least at this time. Now, as we head past the primary towards the general election, there aren't necessarily going to be very many competitive races. Most of the city council districts are heavily Democratic, and a few of the more Republican districts, the Republican lawmakers are not seeing a serious challenge. One city council district where there will be a competitive general election is District 43 in southern Brooklyn. Outgoing Councilmember Vinnie Gentile, a Democrat who lost in the Brooklyn District Attorney primary, has endorsed Justin Brannon, his former aide, to fill the seat. Brannon won the Democratic primary, and in the general election will face John Quaglione, who came out of a crowded Republican primary. Other than that District 43 race, it's hard to point to a city council or borough president or district attorney race that's going to have a very competitive general election contest. Now, along with that one city council race, we also certainly will be watching the three citywide races where there are Republicans on the ballot challenging the incumbent Democrat office holders. That's Mayor Bill de Blasio, who will be facing Republican nominee Nicole Malliotakis, an assembly member from Staten Island. And there will be other candidates challenging the mayor as well, including independent Bo Deedle, and Sal Albanese, who challenged the mayor in the Democratic primary, will be on the Reform Party ballot line. There will be a few other contenders in the mayoral race too. Democratic Comptroller Scott Stringer, who did not have a Democratic primary opponent, will face Michael Faulkner in the general election for comptroller. And public advocate Letitia James, who won about 75% of the vote in a Democratic primary challenge that she saw, will face J.C. Polanco in the general election for public advocate. So we'll be watching those three citywide races, the District 43 city council race, and also looking at some other city council races that maybe are flying under the radar that could see a competitive general election. There's going to be a lot more to dissect here from the results of primary night, including things related to the gender imbalance in the city council, and we'll have more for you on that soon. WBAI News, Ben Max of Gotham Gazette.
Turning to Washington, D.C. and healthcare. Today, Bernie Sanders introduced the Medicare for All Act of 2017, single-payer health care legislation, into the U.S. Senate. Sanders says media likes to talk about the politics of health care, but he says American people want to know how we are going to fix the health care system. He says today we begin the struggle to transform our dysfunctional health care system and make health care in the U.S. a right, not a privilege. Here's Bernie Sanders.
I want to tell you that I am just very excited about the kind of support our Medicare for All legislation is receiving all across this country and right here in the United States Senate. As of today, we now have 16 co-sponsors on this legislation. And in order of seniority, kind of that's the protocol here in the Senate, let me mention to you all of the co-sponsors. Senator Pat Leahy, Sheldon Whitehouse, Tom Udall, Gene Shaheen, Jeff Merkley, Al Franken, Kirsten Gillibrand, Dick Blumenthal, Brian Schatz, Tammy Baldwin, Elizabeth Warren, Martin Heinrich, Mazie Hirono, Senator Ed Markey, Cory Booker, and Senator Harris of California. And we also have dozens of grassroots organizations all across America who are going to help us pass this bill.
Sanders stood with healthcare providers, other senators, and supporters, and he introduced people who have been affected by the current healthcare system. Patients like Rebecca Woods, whose child Charlie was born prematurely. But Woods says her daughter's developmental progress far exceeded initial expectations.
However, all of it came at a cost. I had to make impossible choices. Should I pay for her therapy or my exorbitant asthma medication copay? Choices like these aren't impossible, really. I choose to pay for hers and go without mine. One day, I needed an expensive dental procedure. Unfortunately, it was at the same time a therapy payment was due. Charlie's speech was emerging. I was afraid we would miss a window of opportunity in her development if we cut therapy. I chose to pay her therapy payment and put off my dental procedure. The decision cost me dearly. Due to the delay, an infection spread throughout my mouth and jaw. I went to the emergency department because the swelling in my mouth obstructed my airway. After a course of IV antibiotics, I was discharged. The next day, I had all of my teeth pulled, the infection drained, and parts of my jaw scraped away in a 6-hour procedure under local anesthesia. I could not afford to have it done under general anesthesia. I cried the entire ride home afterwards. Stories like mine should not happen anywhere, but certainly not in our country. Our healthcare system is broken. It's time we look to single-payer healthcare as a way of ensuring that families aren't faced with impossible choices like mine.
And Sanders brought out a nurse oncologist with a heart-wrenching story about one of her patients.
My name is Melissa Johnson Camacho. I've been an oncology nurse for almost 10 years. I've been working hard with National Nurses United and the California Nurses Association all across this nation. We're trying to make a more humane healthcare system. We want one that's based on patient needs and not pain and profit. I'm here today because of my patients. I'm here to advocate for them. And for cancer patients, Medicare for All would be crucial. It would be an enormous relief. And for some, it's going to mean the difference between life and death. Most people don't realize that a cancer diagnosis is not just a very frightening diagnosis, but what comes with it is also financial devastation for far too many. And because of high deductibles and out-of-pocket expenses, we have tragic cases of people who don't even get to the treatment that they need. There are patients that I think about every day. One young woman still lives deep in my heart. Her cancer had metastasized, and her lungs filled with fluid consistently. She needed to have the fluid drained in order to breathe to survive. I noticed she never completely emptied the bags, which meant her lungs never were all the way clear. When I asked why, it was because she could not afford to change the bag more than just once per day. These bags are very expensive, and her insurance did not cover the full cost. She was never able to take a deep breath, and she lived in constant distress and pain, struggling to breathe. And to make matters worse, the insurance policy soon renewed. That meant her annual deductible was in place, and she would have to pay the full amount of her medications and supplies until that deductible was met. That young woman spent the rest of her life in unnecessary stress, unnecessary pain, and unnecessary agony. She never again was able to take a full breath for the rest of her life. And as far as I'm concerned as a nurse, this is treatment denied. This is treatment she needed and deserved. Thank you. Thank you. To me, it is immoral that anyone profits off another person's need for health care. And it is repugnant to me that this profit comes from denying care. I see the suffering and pain this causes every single day in the faces of my patients. This system is killing too many of my patients, and I say no more. Let's put an end to this immoral system that's putting profits before patients' needs. Registered nurses like me know the only way that we are going to do this is with Medicare for All. I want to thank all the senators that are co-sponsoring this bill.
One senator after another co-sponsoring the Medicare for All bill spoke up. Here's New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand.
The bottom line is this. Our democracy only works when regular people stand up and demand action. So thank you to all of you who are here today who have been fighting for Medicare for All year after year. As I've traveled around my state, one of the top concerns I hear from people is that healthcare is still too expensive. Under the healthcare system we have today, too many insurance companies continue to value their profits more than the value of the people they are supposed to be helping. It's time for something better, and I'm thrilled to announce that I support Senator Sanders' Medicare for All bill. Yay! One part of the bill that I worked with my colleagues to put in was the ability for every American to buy into a not-for-profit public option as part of a 4-year transition to get to single payer in this country. This would create affordable public health care that's available to any American to purchase in the already available exchanges. When I called for a not-for-profit public option during my first House race in 2006 in a 2-to-1 Republican district, it became very clear to me that this is not a partisan issue. Healthcare should be a right. It should not be a privilege once and for all. So I will be standing with Bernie, and I hope all of you to make sure that every single American gets access to affordable, good quality health care with a single payer system in America.
And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York, broadcasting at 99.5 FM, streaming at WBAI.org. We're hearing from the launch of Bernie Sanders' Medicare for All bill. New York senior senator, Minority Leader Chuck Schumer didn't come out to support Medicare for All. He says, yes, there's a Sanders bill, but there are many bills we are thinking about.
Democrats believe that health care is a right for all. And there are many different bills out there. There are many good ones. Senator Sanders has a bill. Senator Schatz has a bill on Medicaid buy-in. Senator Stabenow, who's here, has a bill on buy-in for Medicare. Senator Whitehouse has a bill on public option.
Schumer says Democrats want to move the issue forward. Meanwhile, supporters of the Sanders bill lined up to speak. California Senator Kamala Harris says health care isn't a partisan issue, that Medicare for All will bring a better return on investment.
Taxpayers will benefit. You know, our friends in the private sector, they talk about all the time. If they're asking about, are they being efficient? Are they being effective? They ask that question with three letters. What is the ROI, return on the investment? Well, the taxpayers of the United States deserve a better return on their investment. Yes. And when you look at this situation, what we know, the public health model tells us so well, you want to deal with an epidemic? Smartest, most effective, and cheapest way to deal with it is prevention first. If we're dealing with it in terms of early intervention, and certainly if we're dealing with it in the emergency room, it's too late and it's too expensive. Let's give the taxpayers of the United States a better return on their investment, which means Medicare for All. And why? Because Medicare for All stands for the proposition that all Americans from the day of birth throughout their lives will have access to health care. It means understanding that the data tells us somebody with high blood pressure, if they are receiving consistent care, information about what they should be eating, testing and monitoring their blood pressure, we know if we reduce that population who have high blood pressure by just 5%, taxpayers will benefit by $25 billion over the next 5 years. Better return on the investment. Let's look at it in terms of the emergency room. If people resort to the only care they can get in an emergency room, as opposed to monitoring on a daily basis, on a regular basis with a physician that they know and trust, we're looking at right now in the United States, $35.7 billion a year in unpaid emergency room bills. It's a better return on the investment for the American taxpayer, and that is why I'm proud to stand with my colleagues and friends and support Medicare for All.
Bernie Sanders agrees. He says health care for all is not only a moral issue, but an economic issue.
And today we say to those families in Vermont and in Wisconsin and California and all across this country who are spending $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 a year on health insurance that we understand that this is insane and unaffordable to be spending that much money simply to protect the well-being of your family. And we're here to tell those families and people all across this country that under Medicare for All, the average American family will be much better off financially than under the current system because you will no longer be writing checks to private insurance companies. While, depending on your income, your taxes may go up to pay for this publicly funded program, that expense will be more than offset by the money you are saving by the elimination of private insurance costs. And today, we tell the drug companies that the American people are sick and tired of the greed of the pharmaceutical industry. We are no longer going to get ripped off and pay the highest prices in the world for prescription drugs under Medicare for All. We're going to negotiate lower drug prices for the government and for every single American. And today we tell the business community, especially small and medium-sized businesses, that we understand that you want to focus on your core business mission, not to spend countless hours worrying about how you will provide health insurance to your workers. And Medicare for All will allow you to do that because all of your employees, by right, will have comprehensive health care. And today we say to millions of workers that you should not have to be stuck in a job that you don't want just because it provides decent health care to your family. With health care as a right, you will finally have the freedom to do the work you love and are passionate about, and our economy and our nation will benefit from that. 52 years ago, President Lyndon Johnson signed historic legislation that said in the United States of America, if you are 65 or older, you will be guaranteed health care as a right. And that legislation, called Medicare, has been enormously successful. We take it for granted now, but seniors in America are healthier, happier, and more secure than before the passage of Medicare. And today we tell our seniors that as good as Medicare is, we have heard your concerns, and for the first time, we will expand coverage to include dental care, hearing aids, and vision needs. Now let us be honest. The crisis we are discussing today is not really about healthcare. Crisis we are discussing today is a political crisis, which speaks to the incredible power of the insurance companies, the drug companies, and all those who make billions of dollars off of the current system. Over the years, these entities have done everything that they possibly can to prevent us from having lower-priced prescription drugs and universal health care. As one example, hear this. Since 1998, the pharmaceutical industry alone has spent over $3.6 billion in lobbying and hundreds of millions of dollars more in campaign contributions. And they charge us the highest prices in the world for prescription drugs. Now, I fully recognize that legislation which deals with 1/6 of our economy and over $3 trillion is complex, and that nobody, including those of us who are up here now, have all the answers. Unlike the Republican leadership, which tried to pass massive and destructive health care legislation without one public hearing, our job now is to take this legislation to every state in the country and to hear what the people have to say.
But it will be a long haul for Democrats today. Republican Senators Lindsey Graham, Bill Cassidy, Dean Heller, and Ron Johnson, along with former Senator Rick Santorum, began pushing new legislation to provide block grants instead of Affordable Care Act funding to the states. Here's South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham.
Count me out for propping up Obamacare. Hell no to Bernie Care. Count me in for an idea that gives a patient a voice they would never have under single-payer health care. count me in for people in my state making decisions about health care versus some bureaucrat in Washington. There's a lot of fight left in the Republican Party when it comes to repealing and replacing Obamacare.
These Republican senators say states are better equipped than Washington to determine how best to meet the needs of their residents. And today, Donald Trump said he supports the new effort by the Republican senators to repeal and replace Obama's signature health care law. He said in a statement, inaction is not an option. He applauded Graham and Bill Cassidy for continuing to work towards a solution. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.